This podcast is brought to you in part by the estate of Bob Nelson. Bob was a lover of all things San Diego and a longtime supporter of Voice of San Diego and its podcasts. We at Voice of San Diego are honored to have his support during his lifetime and continued support through his estate planning. Are you passionate about resolving conflicts and making positive impact in the world? Then USD's Conflict Management and Resolution Master's Program may be for you. Learn to address conflicts at all levels, from personal disputes to global crises. Join the Kroc School's dedicated community fostering peace and understanding while you acquire practical skills to navigate diverse settings. Apply now and be the change you want to see in the world. Visit sandiego.edu/peace/VOSD. That's sandiego.edu/peace/VOSD. Join culture creator Ramel Wallace, museum CEO Micah Parzon, philanthropist Erwin Jacobs, and urban agriculturist Diane Moss on Season 2 of Stop and Talk, a podcast about the future of the San Diego region. How can we create a vibrant region that celebrates our cultural richness and economic strength? Find out and hear other San Diego experts on Stop and Talk. Discover Seasons 1 and 2 now at stopandtalkpodcast.com. That's stopandtalkpodcast.com.
The best part about that was that you could tell you were just going to do one. You're like, oh, wait, that sounded good. I gotta rip some more out. I think that car needs a oil change.
Welcome to the Voice of San Diego podcast in partnership with News Radio 600 Cogo. I am Scott Lewis, the CEO and Editor-in-Chief at Voice of San Diego, and I'm joined as always by the Managing Editor and Coffee member, Coffee co-host with me, Andrea Lopez Villafana. What's up, Lopez?
Hey, Lewis.
Good to see you. And reporter Jacob McQuinney, who watched the member Coffee. Good job.
I sat right up there. I was paying attention. I was making eye contact.
After you were called out for just standing there, he's like, Jacob, why don't you like sit down or something?
Yeah. I was like, okay, I got to get out of this guy's way. He's
making us nervous.
He's on an engagement warpath here.
He's just like standing there lurking over us. Coming up on the show this week, Mayor Todd Gloria wants to stop a cannabis equity program before it has begun. There was always a theory that if you're going to legalize cannabis, the people who used to get in trouble for selling it should get a shot at selling it legally. The city got a grant to give people like that a leg up, and now they'll have to give the grant back. And the mayor announced a few weeks ago that he had made a handshake deal for the city to rent a warehouse north of Little Italy for 35 years to house at least 1,000 homeless residents. It was all moving very briskly. But now the city is pumping the brakes. We'll explain what happened. And finally, every year, Arizona State University partners with EdTech investment firm GSV Ventures to put on a summit about learning and all the new ways you can do it. Jacob visited the uncanny valley of education, and he'll share what he learned at a conference all about learning and AI. That's all coming up. Stay with us.
But first, do you want to know how many dead whales are in San Diego's trash? Do you want to avoid swimming in poop at the beach? Have you found a litter of wild coyotes and don't know what to do about it? Then you need the Environment Report. Our bi-weekly newsletter is ripe and ready for you to pick. Get answers to your questions and solutions to your unique environmental woes now. Subscribe to the newsletter at vosd.org/environment. That's vosd.org/environment.
All right, Jacob, I encourage you to check out the Arizona State University ASU plus GSV Summit. Always brings in big names. They held it this year at the Manchester Grand Hyatt.
Mm-hmm.
Not to be confused with the convention center where you did not go and have not gone yet.
No, not yet. Although they did hold part of an event there.
It spilled over a little bit.
But so you didn't go.
ASU has a weird connection to San Diego. Like they keep creeping over here.
Classic Zony stuff.
And they were going to take over the newspaper, the Union Tribune, for a while. Like there's a lot of ASU feel here.
Mm-hmm. They have a camp.
Remember they were thinking of the campus in Chula Vista.
Yeah.
Okay. So you went to this. This is all about learning from what is it from. I read it from K to Gray, right?
Exactly. Yeah. They I think it's actually pre-K to Gray.
Oh, right, right.
Yeah, so it
pre-K to Gray.
Exactly. So the range is even larger.
You might say the whole human lifespan.
One might say that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they're talking about how people learn and I asked you to go check it out. See if you might get some fodder for your progress report, mm-hmm. you know, the monthly feature about innovations in education, people trying things and having success, and how'd it go?
Well, I got some fodder. I don't necessarily know that it'll end up in a progress report, but I mean, I will say this, it was interesting. You know, the summit, the ASU plus GSV summit, it's, as you said, Arizona State University plus GSV Ventures, which is this kind of venture capital
global firm. Silicon Valley, right?
I believe that's correct, yeah. This venture capital firm that specializes in ed tech investments. And so this was kind of this weird melding of education and just kind of investment and technology sector conversations. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of the biggest thing I got from it, right? I don't, as I wrote in the learning curve this week, I don't really know exactly where the line between, you know, genuinely trying to help kids with new educational innovations and kind of genuinely trying to hawk
make a buck
is, but it seemed like this conference kind of straddled that line. And the number one story at this conference was AI. It was AI everything. There were panels about how to create an intersectionally feminist AI, how to...
what?
Yeah.
I missed that panel, unfortunately.
Oh.
There were conversations about AI and math. There were conversations about AI tutoring. There was conversations about, I think the name was, can you befriend a chatbot? What is like the future of human relationships in the age of AI? So... all of these, there were many, many conversations that were centered around AI. And in addition, that event that was held at the convention center was all about AI and AI demonstrations of ed tech, right? And even in the conversations that weren't explicitly about AI, AI still crept into them, right? I went to a panel about neurodiverse students and how ed tech may help them. And sure enough, before, you know, the panel ended, the moderator brought up AI and said, you know, we'd be remiss to not bring up AI given that we are at ASU plus GSV. And so it was clear that AI in the minds of many of these investors will play a pivotal role in education going forward. And it's something that, to be quite Frank, kind of scares the crap out of me. I don't know that I'm ready for that degree of jumping into the deep end with technology and education, but you know, they aren't asking me, and it's clear it's going to happen.
Did you come across some interesting companies?
I did. Yeah. I mentioned in the learning curve as well that there were all of these companies whose names feel they have like the mouth feel of real words.
They're like pharmaceutical companies, but using education jargon,
exactly,
right? Let's hear a few.
Yeah. Okay. So we had Learnosity.
Learnosity.
So how about this? How about we can judge on a scale of like one through five, whether or not they sound like real words. Okay. So Learnosity.
No. Let's go with like most fun.
Okay. Most fun. I like that one.
1 to 10.
Okay.
Fun meter of these names. Let's go.
All right. Learnosity.
Learnosity, it's
kind of makes me feel think of snot.
There's a snot element I'm not into. I'm gonna go 6 just because of the snot. Okay. I like the osity,
uh-huh.
but something's wrong there. It can't lead with an N. Let's go six.
Yeah. What do you think, Andrea?
I think a seven.
Okay.
I like when things end in Y's.
Okay. All right. Here's the next one. You may recognize the first half of this word. Learnio.
Okay. Learnio.
Learnio.
It reminds me of a Pokemon.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I choose you, Learnio.
It's like Mario and Luigi's cousin.
Their nerdy cousin.
Yeah. Learnio.
These can't be real. Are these real?
Okay. They are. I didn't, somebody made them up, but it wasn't me. Okay.
Learnio. Okay,
so do we know what Learnio does?
I can find out.
Oh, you learn.
I'm sure you
should
could.
We Learnio what they
I'm,
do?
I'm sure you could. No, let's go on.
Okay. Well, we didn't get a grade here.
Oh. That's a three for me.
Three for you.
Yeah, this just feels like learn, and then they're like, shoot, what should we do? Learno? No, learn, Learnio. There we go. Let's go.
Okay. Okay. Right, yeah. Let's go. All right. Edmentum.
Edmentum. It sounds like a drug.
I think of, you remember when Joe Lieberman was running for president, and they're like, oh, he's got Joe Mentum.
Okay.
Like this, you can't just add mentum anymore.
Well, to be fair, they were doing that for Biden.
Like
as well.
Momentum.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
to education. This is not for me.
Okay, I'm gonna go seven. I haven't seen that mentum usage before. It's good.
Okay,
seven is fair.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Udacity.
I like that one.
I feel like I've heard of this
Udacity.
One before.
Udacity.
This.
I mean, I could be pronouncing it wrong. It
so
could
it's
be
like
audacity.
Audacity.
Yeah.
Like the audacity of learning.
Yeah.
But then you're just like, you.
But it's you. It's the audacity
you
of
you.
You
are dociting.
Like, to learn.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Gotta go four. I don't like it.
Yeah, I'm giving that one an eight.
All right, eight. Okay. Schoolytics.
These are all real?
That's what he said.
Schoolytics. I get what they're doing here. School and analytics.
Yeah.
Schoolytics.
And, you know, I will say.
And I shouldn't give any of these guys crap about this because I combine words all the time. It's my thing.
My good friend used to call it wurging.
Yeah.
Wurging. Oh,
God. But this is the first one where there's truly two different words combined together, I think. And I got to give some props to it. It's my way.
Well, and I will say that this one, I feel like I know what this company
yeah,
does
I feel
more
like
than the other ones.
They're
right?
Measuring schools.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to go with an eight.
Yeah, yeah. How about you?
What
do you
giving
think?
It a four. It's too basic.
School. Okay. All right. You guys ready for this one?
Yeah.
Quizzes.
Quizzes.
No. So like, now this, we have to, I have to spell it out for you guys. Q-U-I-Z-I-Z-Z.
Wow.
That's not for me. That's a no.
It sounds like a Google Translate version of like a
Japanese.
What's
the other
Japanese,
is?
I don't know.
I'm uncomfortable with that. I'm not even going to say what I feel when I see is like that.
Could it be Riz?
Well, quizzes. I'm going to go. I got to go two on that.
Yeah,
that's very,
my least
very,
favorite.
Yeah.
What,
okay.
Okay. Now this
last
one. This one was my personal favorite.
Yeah.
Thunkable.
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 Thunkable. So you thunk it.
I thunk it was pretty rad.
If you can think it. You might have thunk it, and thus it might be thunkable.
So for me, I feel like, you know, this is just, it reminds me of Dunkables, and I like cookies. So.
Uh-huh. Oh.
All right, before the show's over, will you find out what thunkable does? But I got to give that a nine. That's the best one
yeah,
yet.
That's the best one.
Okay. Okay, well, I'm glad that we could do this. But yeah, it was a strange.
Was there anything inspiring? Did you get out of there? Anything you're like, oh, that's going to be cool.
Well, what I did get out of it is, you know, whether I like it or not, this is going to be part of the landscape. This kind of stuff, the thunkables and the quizzes and the AIs of the world are going to be part of education going forward. And, you know, far be it for me to try to stand in front of that. And ultimately, schools have not always been, you know, fairy tales and rainbows and sunshine. Evolution is good, but I do have this deep distrust of a lot of these things. And you know, one thing that didn't make it into the learning curve that I thought was very, very fun was I was sitting in the grand hall of the Marriott and kind of drinking
a
coffee.
The Grand Hyatt.
Excuse me, the Grand Hall of the Grand Hyatt.
Manchester Grand Hyatt.
Yes. And drinking a coffee and just kind of like my head spinning and I look over.
Do you know,
and
can I just say it's really still a classic San Diego thing that Doug Manchester sold that hotel, but as part of the sales agreement got them to make sure that it was always named Manchester.
I did not know that.
It's just, it's beautiful and it's egocentric.
It's pretty impressive.
Awesomeness.
What do you think Doug Manchester's ed tech company would be called? Manchmentum?
Ed Manchosity.
Okay, go ahead.
So I'm sitting there drinking a coffee.
I just love how Jacob casually drops it. This did not make it into the learning curve, as if his editor did not completely delete it. Oh. But I know what he's going to say.
But I was sitting there drinking a coffee, feeling a little bit overwhelmed, and I noticed that there was a bookstore in there, and they were selling Dune. Which was, it's kind of reaching new audiences right now with, you know, on the backs of Zendaya and Denis Villeneuve and unfortunately Timmy Chalamet. But
it's unreadable, but go ahead.
It was one of my favorite books growing up.
You read the whole thing?
Of course.
Okay. I found it unreadable. I love Dune, but that was difficult to read.
It was excellent.
Okay.
And it was great to read. It was an absolute joy.
Okay. Go on.
But it got me thinking about one of the great foundational pieces of lore of that future world, which was the Butlerian Jihad.
Yeah.
The great revolt against thinking machines and conscious robots, during which, you know, humanity revolted against them because they were controlling humans too much, and over a period of a century eradicated them, and written into the new Bible that came out of it, the Orange Catholic Bible, was the commandment, thou shalt not, thou shalt not create machines that mimic the minds of humans, something to that effect. Mm. And that was
in the bookstore for the Arizona State in the bookstore. University GSV Summit.
Yes, and that was at that moment, you know, a panel on that was something I really would have loved to attend.
That would have been awesome. I think this is an interesting point. Like, we can joke all we want, but there's always been this tension about privatizing or making money off education, public education in particular. There's always this like sensitivity about it. And I've always been fascinated by that line, because even the most hardcore of like progressive school districts have books they buy from companies and contractors they hire to build things and TVs and computers that they buy from companies and all kinds of email programs, or Google Classroom's been a huge thing for my son, neurodivergent kid. Like, there's been a lot of those kinds of products that have really helped. And so where is the line? But AI is just a whole new thing. I'm glad that I thought your learning curve was an excellent piece. Check it out at vosd.org/Jacob with a K, J-A-K-O-B. Well, you've been following this for a while, Lopez, and I've been waiting for updates every few weeks from you. There was a lot of people worried about the progress of a plan that the city had to address an issue that came up when they legalized, when the state legalized cannabis, which was, a lot of people got in trouble for cannabis before. They arguably helped build the market for it, and now a bunch of people were going to make money legitimately off of it. And what about the people who got in trouble for it and had trouble building the kind of wealth that they would need to be able to launch these things? And so there were all these sort of signs that they would do something for those people. The city actually raised some money and was working on a program to do it. What happened?
Yeah. So let's just put a little bit of context here. Individuals who previously were selling cannabis illegally have suffered greatly because of it, right? A lot of them did a lot of time. And not only that, but they've got records, right? So that has followed them throughout the rest of their lives. I interviewed a lot of people who, you know, told me they'd walk into jobs more qualified than the person interviewing them. But because of this one record, you know, they had to settle for like lower paying jobs. And of course, that affects your wealth personally, generational wealth, and so on. And so for individuals who have these sorts of records, criminal records, obviously they, you know, if they do want to open up some sort of cannabis shop, you got to have capital, you got to be able to get some loans, you got to be able to secure a lease, you got to be able to navigate all these permits. And, you know, is having a criminal record an issue for that? So what happened with the city of San Diego is that San Diego was looking at, well, how can we address this issue? How can we help individuals who helped create this market, like you said, enter the market legally and succeed and, you know, offer more options? And sort of like, in a way, repairing the harm done by the war on drugs. So the city of San Diego did a couple things, one of them being a study that looked at how have we, the city of San Diego, criminalized certain communities over others.
You're saying they started an initiative by doing a study?
Yeah. Whoa. Shocking. They even had a like feedback group and everything.
Yeah, a little task force.
A task force. Yeah. That sounds like a
great way
to
start a program.
Yeah, it really.
Time tested.
Yeah.
They did this study. Mind you, the city of San Diego is not the only one. I mean, cities across the state of California and the state of California has encouraged these types of programs in cities, not only that, provided funding for cities to roll out these sorts of programs.
Yeah, and as an example of how this was important to a lot of people, Shawnee La Rivera and his colleagues, the president of the city council and others, stopped an effort to liberalize how many places could be allowed to have cannabis dispensaries and other cannabis facilities because he said, we need to get this equity program done first.
Right.
And so there was a lot of angst and interest in this.
Yeah.
I mean, it is pretty crazy. It's not often that somebody's life is blown up by the criminalization of something and then that thing
is legal.
All of a sudden is legal and
people are making lots of money off of it.
I mean, it's true. It's a mind-boggling thing to just sit here and think about. And now because of the fact that it was illegal before, but as it is now legal now, you are kind of locked out of all of the potential earnings that you could make from taking part in this market that you already have experience in.
Yeah. And not only individuals, I mean, complete families.
Yeah.
I sat down with people who were previously incarcerated because they sold cannabis or had mm-hmm. cannabis in their car. One individual I spoke to mentioned how, you know, back in the day, police officers would routinely stop you to check if you had insurance. And that's sort of how he was arrested because uh-huh. there happened to be cannabis in his vehicle. Uh-huh. And another person I spoke to, he was arrested. He spent 10 years in jail. His brother did too. And another person I interviewed, his father was in jail. And wow. So like, it just creates a generation of harm, right? If you as a family, your children go to jail, but maybe you as a kid, your dad goes to jail, you grow up in fatherless homes, as this one person I spoke to put it. So there's lots of harm done. But the city of San Diego, you know, did this study. They also did a lot of outreach. And one of the activists I spoke to was like, this was the most amazing outreach effort I've ever seen. They provided this anecdote about how they were sort of having a meeting for feedback from the community just mm-hmm. to hear, like, what issues do you face, right? What do you want to see in a program that we built? And I guess there was a group of guys outside of this space selling weed, like, just on the street. And a city staffer came out and was like, hey, you guys, we want you in this building. Like, we want your feedback. We want to hear from you. And the community was very impressed by the level of attention that was put into, mm-hmm. You know, the build out of this program. And they were very, very excited to see that the city was going to provide something that actually repaired a lot of the harm done.
Mm-hmm. So there was outreach done. There was a study
done. Studies.
Surely this birthed a successful program.
Yeah. What kind of specific things would they aim to do?
Yeah. So lots of things, but one of them, they would reduce certain requirements, like in order to apply for a city conditional use permit to open up a cannabis shop, you need to already have some sort of building. And so they were going to remove that requirement for equity applicants. They were also going to provide some money for them to pay for their permits. They talked about like mentorship opportunities. They also talked about providing, allowing these sorts of businesses that were run by equity applicants, so people who had suffered by the war on drugs, certain locations, so like transit priority areas over, you know, more secluded areas. So putting them in kind of like prime real estate, right? Yeah. The other point too was they would reduce the distance that you have to be from a school. I can't remember what they are currently, but like you, those sort of cannabis shops have to be, mm-hmm. you know, certain distance from, usually, yeah, from like churches, schools, things like that. For these applicants, that would be a shorter distance. Mm-hmm. So lots of, you know, little factors, a lot of help with how to get started. And so people were really looking forward to that. And the city was planning on offering 36 licenses.
I'm going to guess that there's a group of people who weren't looking forward to that.
Yes, certainly. There's a group of people who weren't looking forward to that. One of those being, I think, a lot of the current people in the industry had a lot of concerns about like who the applicants were. I know a big concern was, if I'm an equity applicant, let's say, and I secure a license from the city of San Diego, maybe I keep that license for a year and then I go off and sell it to some, you know, big corporation. And now this big corporation has prime real estate in the city of San Diego, you know, good spot, whatever. So they really didn't want that to happen.
All this to say the program sort of ground to a halt. And it was not clear why.
Yeah. So these advocates I was talking to were like, we don't know what's going on. We don't know what's happening. We don't know where we're at. We haven't heard anything. They were growing increasingly frustrated. Again, think about the level of outreach and the involvement that they played in providing feedback and advocating for this program, showing up at land use committee meetings and planning committee meetings. And they heard nothing. And so I checked in a couple weeks ago and I was like, hey, can I get an interview? I'm trying to figure out what this program's about, like where it's at, who is running it, like what's going on here. You know, we haven't heard anything. People haven't heard anything. And I kind of just want to know. And I was told, oh, yeah, like we're finalizing some details. You know, we'll get back to you as soon as we finalize those details. And no, they didn't get back to me, but I did find out because the mayor released his proposed budget. And in that, he included that he was eliminating this cannabis social equity program. And so basically that answered my question, that they weren't working on a program. They're going to just like drop it completely. So tied to that, the city obviously did the study. The city did the feedback, whatever. But they also applied for state funding. And because the city didn't already have a program in place, they scored pretty low in, you know, how the state determines how much money to give out. So the state ended up giving the city of San Diego like $800,000, a little more. And that is money that the city now has to give back.
Fascinating. So you could say, well, it might be a victim of the budget. It's a bad budget. There's a big budget deficit. There's usually the first year of a budget deficit, they look for one-time things to get rid of, you know, easy sort of reserve payments they can stop, or these easy things to like patch the budget so they can get mm-hmm. another year in. It's usually the second or third budget cycle after a deficit begins where things are like really hairy, where people might actually lose jobs or have to transfer, programs get cut, library hours get cut, police officers, you know, aren't patrolling in as many places, all those kinds of things. That hasn't really happened, but these programs are getting cut. I think that the mayor is basically betting that within a year they'll be able to get this tax increase, a cent sales tax that they want to add to what people in the city already pay, and it would all go to the city as opposed to them only getting a part of it. That all said, this program, do you think it was a victim of the budget, or do you think it was a victim of it wasn't going well? There were people that didn't like it and he cut it.
It's hard to say, but I think if you read between the lines and you speak to all the activists involved, they feel it's the second, that for whatever reason, powers that be, or maybe the mayor, they don't want this program to exist. And this is just an excuse. The mayor has said that, you know, these cuts are necessary. They're difficult, necessary. Hasn't directly addressed, you know, what's up with this cannabis equity program. But just because it was sort of, you know, not going anywhere for a while, I mean, I see why people, you know,
assume I think that. It's just the whole line of things that the city does where they make a promise, and it's so easy to make the promise, but it's always hard to like deliver the actual thing, right? Yeah. When it actually comes down to giving people licenses that might give them slight advantage or different advantage in the market, and that angers people, that's when it's not going to be able to happen. And that's, and yet, like, it's always easy to say, oh, we're going to do an equity program. Yeah, we're going to allow these, we're going to give these permits out, but don't worry, we're going to do a program that's going to make it right for people who had it bad when it was illegal. And it's all the time. It's always the same thing. It's always easy to do that stuff, climate equity or climate mitigation stuff, until it actually means changing people's, you know, either businesses or lives. And then they're like, no, can't do that.
we can't touch or hurt people's bank accounts. There was a meeting I listened to where someone brought up kind of like saying that they represented industry, saying that this was going to saturate the market, and like you couldn't have so many cannabis shops because, you know, it really affects those that already exist. And
they might have to lower prices and make it easier to get. And then
they said, like, and these people don't really know how to run these businesses. And there was a lot of, you know, coded, what I think is coded racism in a lot of those comments. And one speaker got up and he made a great point about that, but also saying, you know, like Walmart, or what did I think he said, like Jack in the Box doesn't care if it's next, you know, it's next to a McDonald's, and Walmart doesn't care if it's next to a Target. Like everybody's going to go to whatever they want to go to and shop. And he was making the case for, you know, like there's lots of options for people.
So given how strongly it's clear that some people like Elo Rivera felt about this program, is it just, do you think it's just going to disappear, or is there going to be some pushback from the council?
I don't know. Advocates and some of the people I spoke to that would be considered eligible for this program are, you know, pretty frustrated at what has happened, but are very determined to advocate for the city council to, you know, not let this program die before it's even started. I think a lot of people have concerns, but advocates and people who would be eligible for this program are just like, just give us this opportunity, give us this chance. Like, that's all we're asking you. We don't even want funding. Like, we'll figure that out. Everyone I spoke to was just like, we want to build generational wealth for our communities. And a lot of them live in southeastern San Diego, City Heights, Paradise Hills type of area, Spring Valley as well.
We're going to take a quick break. Stay with us.
Join culture creator Remel Wallace, museum CEO Micah Parzon, philanthropist Erwin Jacobs, and urban agriculturist Diane Moss on season 2 of Stop and Talk, a podcast about the future of the San Diego region. How can we create a vibrant region that celebrates our cultural richness and economic strength? Find out and hear other San Diego experts on Stop and Talk. Discover seasons 1 and 2 now at stopandtalkpodcast.com. That's stopandtalkpodcast.com. Are you passionate about resolving conflicts and making positive impact in the world? Then USD's Conflict Management and Resolution Master's Program may be for you. Learn to address conflicts at all levels, from personal disputes to global crises. Join the Kroc School's dedicated community fostering peace and understanding while you acquire practical skills to navigate diverse settings. Apply now and be the change you want to see in the world. Visit sandiego.edu/peace/VOSD. That's sandiego.edu/peace/VOSD.
For several months there, we were talking about a new homeless campus that was going to put up near the airport at H Barracks, right? A lot of the Point Lomans were pretty upset about it, and the possibility that people might venture over the bridge and infest the community with their presence. But that looks like that might largely be now cut back, if not walked back, because the mayor has a new idea.
Yeah.
Full of ideas.
A 65,000 square foot warehouse, former printing press in Middletown. I don't, nobody refers to Middletown.
I mean, there are lots of neighborhood area names that just don't actually get used.
That I know it's a stop on the trolley, but nobody's ever gotten off and on that stop, right? Maybe a few. I'm sure somebody has.
Well, this is
one of those things that Instagram's going to pull and they're like, yeah, I get off on
Middletown
it. I'm a big fan of Middletown stuff.
The big question though is like, if you,
what do these guys know?
If you lived or worked in that area, would you tell somebody like when somebody asked, oh, yes, I work in Middletown? It's like, no, you would not say that.
No, you would probably say Little Italy, because Little Italy continues to expand all the way to our office. Have you noticed it's right on the edge of our office
now?
Yeah,
Little Italy is like the Russia of downtown neighborhoods.
I mean, that like all these luxurious apartments say, come live in Little
the
Italy.
Simone, Little Italy. It's like, not even.
It's not.
Okay. So
we need to have a real conversation about apartment builders Little Italy facing.
Yes. So this is at Kettner and Vine. It's northern north Little Italy.
Yeah.
It's
the problem,
the little
is
Italians
that,
venture up there sometime.
The problem is that as soon as you like ditch phrases like that, all of a sudden you have these very tortured long explanations. You're like, oh, I live like just south of Mission Hills and just like, you know, east of the airport,
yeah,
and a little bit north of Little Italy.
Yeah.
It's like right by the five.
Yeah. Yeah.
You described it well when you said it was near some show place.
Oh, like just near Casbah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just near the Casbah. Yeah.
That's
should just call that neighborhood Casbah. Honestly.
Oh, that would be cool.
That would be good. I like that.
So the mayor met with the owner of that building and has decided he wants to lease it for 35 years. And the city, not the mayor, would lease it for 35 years. And it's about, what, 1.8 million now per year? And then it would go up 3% per year for 35 years. Hmm. So eventually it would be quite an annual expense. But also they need to spend $18 million, the city will, to reimburse some tenant improvements that would need to happen to make it a place that 1,000 beds could be put so that people could be sheltered there. So this was really like sailing through as a project until the IBA, the Independent Budget Analyst, reports to the city council, has a little bit more freedom to say things. They don't have to report to the mayor. And they raised some concerns about this. They want to analyze everything the city council has to decide so they can give a report and the city council gets to decide.
Likely thing for an analyst to do.
Right. And they could use Schoolytics to do it. they asked a bunch of questions. Now, after some of the real estate scandals that the city has had, they got authorization to have a consultant they could turn to for some of these questions so that some of the scandals of the past aren't repeated. The questions that this consultant has asked, which we are not privy to because they are part of a real estate negotiation, have apparently been serious enough to cause the mayor himself to walk back the idea a little bit, delay it, so that they can figure out what's going on here. And what's going on is really interesting. So basically, a guy bought the building and is now offering it to the city. And he offered it through an email he just sent the city, like, hey, I got this building, why don't you put the homeless here?
Mm-hmm. But it
I
also
love it's so simple.
Yeah,
I'm just gonna shoot an email.
What's the guy's name? You know this person, or you've seen this person before. All right, so tell us, what do we know about this man?
Yeah, so Doug Ham, he goes by, but his full name is Douglas. He purchased the building I think a day before, or the sale went through a day before the mayor announced this. Lisa was actually chasing this and she's been looking into who he is. And she came over and she was telling me a little about him. And I was like, what does he look like? Like, who is this guy, right? We know nothing really about him. And so I Googled him and like a wedding style website came up. And I was like, this guy looks so familiar. Why can't I figure it out? And then I typed his name in Barrio Logan. And instantly, I remembered that he was at a community planning group meeting that I went to years ago.
In Barrio Logan.
And it was, I mean, those meetings can get pretty fired up, but that was a pretty hot meeting because he had purchased a building in Barrio Logan, and he had this grand plan to build a boutique hotel in Barrio Logan. And a lot of residents were not stoked about this idea, and they made it very clear at that meeting. So I was sitting there, you know, like young reporter, writing all these things down, and people were fired up. They were telling him, like, you don't come from Barrio Logan. You don't know us.
I mean, you gotta admire the audacity, right? Like, of this guy.
I don't know if it was audacity or just like not knowing.
I think there's audacity can include ignorance.
Okay.
Like, and in fact, kind of need ignorance sometimes to be audacious.
Yeah.
And to show up at Barrio Logan with your plans. White guy idea for a boutique hotel.
Yeah.
I mean, that's that's something. That's moxie.
He clearly wasn't paying attention to Fruteria.
Yeah, it was no Fruteria. He did not see what happened with that. But, you know, they were there for a while. Everybody was like speaking up. And I just remember this moment where he was like, all right, what I'm hearing is like, you guys don't want this. It's really interesting. But, you know, he handled it pretty well. I can't imagine that it's fun to be yelled at for your cool project. But yeah, that it was just funny. That small world, I remembered this guy.
What do we know about the building?
Okay, so Doug purchased the building for $13.25 million. But a few years before, in 2015, someone purchased that same building for him for $8.3 million.
Okay. So we'll be paying for 35 years this lease and have to handle all the upfront costs. And there's always all this concern already about congregate shelters themselves. They're often not the most attractive place for people to go. There's very little privacy. It can be pretty weird. You often can't have your family together, stuff like that. We don't know how this will be set up. But I think another important question is, how will this get funded, and will it actually add capacity, right? Will it add beds, or will it take away from other things? Now, there's this dispute that's arisen between the city, the mayor, and the housing commission, because the mayor says they've got the money at the housing commission in their reserves. They can pay for it. And the housing commission says, no. The money you're saying we can use to pay for this is actually reserves that we have set aside for specific affordable housing units and construction that you want to see built, and that the people have already are already counting on, but we just aren't releasing the money yet because it hasn't been, you know, authorized or finished yet, or it hasn't reached the point where it's ready to take that money. So you take that, you're gonna jeopardize some of these buildings. And they're like, no, how about you just get the money over here and we'll make this happen, right?
Yeah, well, Lisa found out, and we're recording Thursday, the story will probably be online already, but she found out that Gloria's team doesn't actually know where the money's coming from. So we had been trying to figure out, like, okay, what did they look at exactly to say, okay, we can pull it from here, we can pull it from here. And we were thinking, like, maybe it was from some fund for affordable housing. But she found out that they don't actually know where it's coming from. So it's just sort of like, we want $15 million, figure it out.
Yeah. Hey. Wow.
Money, please.
Well, that'll be really interesting to see, because it now has become the centerpiece for his plan to address the crisis. We have major questions about whether it'll actually add capacity, whether it hurt ongoing other programs or other shelters where there are people now, or whether it will completely eliminate the need for the H Barracks facility near the airport. Lisa was saying that they're going to still do a safe camping site there. But obviously a lot of the safe parking spot there. But a lot of the attention now turns over here. There's going to be a secret closed session meeting on, it's not secret, it's close.
We know it's happening, so it's not a secret.
It's closed session meeting for the city council on like Monday or Tuesday, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to talk about it, and we'll see if there's more announcements after that, huh? Well, we will keep an eye on that. Obviously, want to see all of the nuts and bolts and actual dollars and cents, because that's what we do. Follow that stuff for you.
That was cute.
Thanks for listening to the Voice of San Diego podcast, the most popular public affairs podcast recorded in San Diego. We are the most popular public affairs podcast that is also attached through our greater corporation and newsroom to the best biweekly environment report known as the Environment Report, written by Mackenzie Elmer. Her environment report is a great mix of policy nature, special insights from Mac herself. Check it out, vosd.org/environment. That's vosd.org/environment. I'm Scott Lewis, CEO and Editor-in-Chief at Voice of San Diego. Andrea Lopez Villafana is our Managing Editor. Jacob McQuinney is our Education Reporter and the composer of our theme music. Nate John's our producer. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.